In continuance of our discovery on the basic conditions required for healing, we've had a look at how the human body was designed to heal itself, and it'll heal itself if given the right conditions. In our previous two presentations, we looked at the importance of pure air so that we can get that oxygen so vital for the life of the human body. We looked at sunshine. We looked at how the sunshine is not the enemy in the sky. It's actually essential that the human body have sunshine. Just as a plant withers if it has no sunshine, so the human body. Today, we're going to look at temperance. What does temperance mean? Temperance means not taking anything into the body that will harm it and taking in moderation the good things. So we need a list of two things there. So there are some things that should never enter the human body if you're looking for optimum performance, and there are some things that should be done in moderation. So really, moderation in all good things. Some say moderation in all things. Well, you would never say moderation in arsenic or cyanide. No, there are some things that must never enter the human body if you're looking for optimum performance. So good things. So all good things should be done in moderation. Even good things can turn toxic if overdone. Also work. Work should be done in moderation. What's the old saying? All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, but also play. All play and no work makes Jack a poor boy. So basically it's a balance of all good things. It surprises me that we've come to a time on planet Earth where adults don't teach children to work. If you don't teach a child to work, you deprive them of the joy of accomplishment. And you basically send to the world teenagers, usually, by the time they're going to the workforce, that are almost useless. We had a lady do our program, and she brought her 15-year-old daughter with her. Her 15-year-old daughter was to help us in the cleaning, in the kitchen. We quickly realized this girl had never been in the kitchen. She had never made a bed. She didn't know how to do anything. We ended up letting her sit and listen to the lectures because we couldn't afford a staff member just to teach her to be with her the whole time. She could not even cut up an apple. She got angry with her mother. She said, "Mum, why didn't you teach me these things?" Her mother said, "I thought I was being a good mother." I say to adults, the day doesn't come when the child stands there and says, "Okay, I'm ready to work now." Have you noticed that does not happen? So it should be a balance of all the good things. But there are some things that should never enter the human body if you're looking for optimum performance. And I consider the pure crystallized acid that's been extracted from the sugarcane plant one of the most lethal substances ever to be introduced to mankind. There are several books that show what the sugar does. One's called Sugar Blues by William Duffy. He calls his book Sugar Blues because he shows how sugar gets the blood sugar level up very fast, and then the brain says to the pancreas, "Quick, release a corresponding amount of insulin to get it down again," but then it usually goes too low. So what does the person do then? "I'll have another little bit of sugar to get it up again." It's that whiplash that wears out the pancreas. But when we go to the mind, I'll show you also how it drastically affects the mind. When the blood sugar levels go too high, it's like bypassing the basic reasoning powers of the brain. And then when it goes too low, the reasoning powers of the brain are almost non-existent. So the pancreas and the brain are the two organs. They're directly affected by the refined sugar. But what also is almost equal with this danger is the hybridized wheat of today. In the 1950s, wheat was hybridized. The aim was to produce a plant with a high yield of grain to help with the starvation crisis in India, Africa, Mexico. It was rushed through with no time for safety studies. And what they did never address was the effect on the human body. They just presumed it would just be like the wheat before they were hybridized. It's just that they created a plant, instead of growing this high, it grows that high, has a thick stem with a heavy yield of grain. That was their purpose. And the farmers love it. because they're getting sometimes six times more grain per acre. Now they've got to pay their bills. So in the 1970s, this hybridized wheat went worldwide. By the 1990s, every cake, every donut, every bread, biscuit, pasta, cookie, cereal, it's all made out of the hybridized wheat. Can you get wheat that was not hybridized? You can. It's called Enkenhorn or Kamut or Spelt. But we'll be discussing that a little bit more in another lecture. What I want to show you today is what the hybridization of the wheat did to the starch structure. It created a starch called amylopectin A. Amylopectin A is the starch that was created in the hybridization process of creating this new wheat, so to speak. It's called amylopectin A, and it gets the blood sugar level up very high, very fast, and then we've got a corresponding dump. Let me give you something to compare it to. Amylopectin B is found in bananas, it's found in potatoes, and if you're familiar with the glycemic index of food, banana and potatoes, they get the blood sugar level up fairly high, fairly fast, not as high, not as fast, not as low. Amylopectin C. Amylopectin C is the starch found in your legumes, so your chickpeas, lima beans, black-eyed beans, lentils. It gives a nice steady rise and a nice steady drop. Every cell in the body requires, needs, and functions better on a steady, sure delivery of fuel, which amylopectin C will give. Now let's have a look at the glycemic index in the light of what I've just shown you. The glycemic index is how quickly the food breaks down to glucose in the blood. So your baseline is 55. Anything below 55 is considered low GI or low glycemic index. So cherries sit at about 26. Grapefruit, it sits at 25. So anyone who's conquering cancer, want to lose weight, conquering their diabetes, these are good fruits because it's a slower delivery of glucose into the blood. It probably isn't a surprise to you to see that sugar, it sits at 59. But what is a surprise is that white flour, it sits at 69. But what is really a shock is where whole wheat sits. So the whole wheat, it sits at 72. How could that be? How could whole wheat get the blood sugar level up higher and quicker than white? It's because it hasn't been refined. It's got more amylopectin A in it. And the tragedy is, most diabetics are told, have whole wheat bread, whole wheat pasta, whole wheat articles of food. So why aren't they told this? Well, unfortunately, Australia and America grow a lot of wheat. So if this is known, can you see wheat consumption would drastically drop? It's a difficult subject to broach. But we've seen many diabetics totally conquer their diabetes, type 1 and type 2. And part of conquering diabetes is eliminating the wheat. The ancient grains are fine, the ones that were not hybridized. There's your spelt. We had a farmer from out west come and she said, we grow spelt, but she said, we don't get near as much money per acre as we get for the hybridized wheat. Can you see the problem? And that's why the wheat is here. You have a look at the time frame again. So 1970s, this wheat went worldwide. 1990s, all wheat products are made out of the hybridized wheat. Now let's compare diabetes. Diabetes has just exploded. Yes, The sugar plays a big role, but so does the hybridized wheat. And how many are a combination of all those two? There's your donuts, there's your cakes, cookies, pastries. Caffeine. We're looking at the articles that should not enter the human body if you're looking for optimum performance. Why caffeine? What's the problem with caffeine? Remember, we always should have Y on the tip of our lips. Here is a nerve cell. And our nerve cell is different to other cells. It's our electrical system. So it doesn't touch, they don't touch each other. They communicate with each other via little chemical messengers. This is the arm that comes out of the nerve cell. Here is the, these are all the receiving stations. They're called dendrites. This is the axon. And then at the bottom of the axon, there's little filaments with little boutons. And here is the next nerve cell. Here are the dendrites or the receiving stations. Chemical messengers shoot from cell to cell. Anywhere between 200 miles an hour. These little chemical messengers called neurotransmitters are shooting through. So the messages come in, they're encapsulated, they're sent down the arm into the little boutons, then they release out to the next nerve cell. One nerve cell has the ability to communicate with 20,000 other nerve cells. What caffeine does is it interferes with the neurotransmitter level. Let me show you. One is adenosine, and adenosine is a neurotransmitter that acts like the brakes. When caffeine goes into a body, adenosine levels drop. Now that's potentially dangerous. Brakes are failing. So very quickly, the body adapts and adjusts. Don't we love this adaptation process of the body? It can actually be good news and bad news. But it's got to try and maintain those brakes, and so it develops extra receptor sites to grab every bit of adenosine that comes through. Then the person comes to our health retreats. We don't serve any coffee. Adenosine levels go back to normal. Receptor sites get flooded, and that hurts. More people suffer from caffeine withdrawals than any other withdrawal. We've had people come off methamphetamines, methadone, heroin, alcohol, cigarettes. No one suffers like the coffee drinker. Now I'm talking about short-term suffering. They recover much quicker than the other than the other addictions. The other neurotransmitter that's affected is acetylcholine. An acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter that has to do with brain function, and it rises when someone has a cup of coffee. Isn't that good? Don't we need our brain sparky? Well, the problem is the brain now says, oh no, we've got an imbalance. We've got too much acetylcholine. Stop making so much. So there might be an initial spark of brain function, but then there's a corresponding dump. The other neurotransmitter that's affected is dopamine. And dopamine is your pursuit of reward, your pursuit of happiness hormone, your pursuit of escape. It rises when a person has a cup of coffee. So eventually, of course, dopamine levels are being exhausted. Caffeine causes a chemical imbalance in the brain. It must have been about 5 years ago, National Geographic did a whole article on coffee. And it said in that article, all the geniuses are found drinking coffee. In fact, you read that article and you just want to go out and buy coffee. I was intrigued by this article. Next edition of National Geographic was full of letters from people saying, why did you only give half the story? And they only gave half the story. There's the initial rise. What about the corresponding dump? Because the brain runs according to precision balance, it's constantly working to keep that balance. I was refreshed to see that a lot of people wrote in, very damning, saying, you only gave half the story. Mercury. Mercury is a neurotransmitter. Mercury. Mercury is a neurotoxin. Neurotoxin means brain poison. And this brain cell is unique in that once it dies, it's gone, does not regrow. When we go to the mind, I'm going to show you some processes that can stimulate new growth. But once that's dead, it's gone. There is a part of the brain that, when properly stimulated, can make new brain cells. But once that's gone, it's gone. So we have to protect our brain cells because the ones we have now, we have for life. And mercury is a neurotoxin. This is not my opinion. This is just fact. You can check it out for yourself. So we need to keep this away from the body. There are three places that our body can be exposed to mercury. One is fish. There's hardly a fish today that doesn't have mercury in it. The planet is polluted. I don't think anyone would argue with that fact. Especially the creatures of the sea that are the vacuum cleaners of the sea. The second place you can be exposed is the mercury fillings in the mouth. Did you know that mercury fillings were banned for 300 years in America? It was the early 1900s. Two dentists from Europe came over, started their own dental association, the American Dental Association. Before that, the association was the American Association of Dental Surgeons. So they started the ADA and they legalized mercury. Why do they like the mercury fillings? They're the amalgamated, because it's an amalgamation of mercury and other metals. Well, it's the only metal that's liquid, so it sort of molds to the hole in the mouth. It's also lasts forever, what a worry, and it's antiseptic. Well, it's antiseptic, all right, it's anti-life. Now, one of the problems with mercury, other than the fact that it's a neurotoxin, that's a big problem, is it's bioaccumulative. That means the longer it's in the mouth, the more it is accumulating in the tissues. And there's a little video you can Google this called the smoking tooth. And they put this special screen in front of this tooth that's got mercury in it. They pour very hot water on it and you can see the vapors coming off. And they rub it as if someone's chewing or chewing gum and you see the vapors coming off. I read of one paper where a man had his tooth taken out that had a mercury filling in it. And they tested it. It was 25% mercury. When it went in, it was 50% mercury. Young dentists today are taught not to use it. I've spoken to a few young dentists who are going through university. They said, no, we don't use it anymore because it's a neurotoxin. So the only dentists still using it, really, are probably 40 and above. What can you do if you've got mercury fillings in your mouth? My suggestion is to find a biological dentist and have them removed. Remember, the longer they're in the mouth, the more they're accumulating in the tissues. And mercury, it's a neurotoxin. When the vapors connect with the bacteria in the mouth, it becomes in an organic form, which means it can go through the blood-brain barrier, it starts eating away at the myelin sheath, it can kill off brain cells. When that myelin sheath is three-quarters gone, there's your multiple sclerosis. It should never enter the human body. There's no safe dose of it. There's no safe dose of alcohol. Alcohol is also a neurotoxin. So here in the US, you have your history from 1920 to 1933, the alcohol was banned. It was only legalized because the American government told the people if they legalized alcohol, they wouldn't have to pay taxes, but they're certainly paying taxes today. There's no safe dose of alcohol. Where did I get that statement from? The Australian Health Department. And there's no safe dose of mercury. These things must be eliminated if you're looking for optimum performance. Drugs. Drugs never cure disease, they just change the form and location of disease. That means every drug has a side effect. It's easy today, if you're on any type of medication, Google it and scroll down and look at those side effects. And sometimes they say these side effects are rare, but I've met too many people with the side effects. A lady contacted me recently, she said, my mother's developing Parkinson's disease. What can she do? So I gave her the name of a book. It's called Stop Alzheimer's Now by Dr. Bruce Fife. And in his book, he shows how they're having success with coconut oil. Coconut oil breaks down in the body to ketones, and ketones are neurohealers, neuroprotectors. We'll be looking at that a little bit more later in the week. She wrote back and she said, I've got the book, sounds great, but he says the drug that my mother's on, she must stop it. So I Googled the drug that her mother was on, and it was for schizophrenia. She's been on it for 25 years, and the number one side effect is Parkinson's. So this drug has given her mother Parkinson's. I said, the doctor's right. She will not conquer her Parkinson's until that drug stops. And she said, well, she's got schizophrenia. I said, go to your doctor. Go to your doctor and see if there's any other medication that may be a little milder that may help. And by the way, the dietary program that she goes on and the coconut oil that she goes on, that will also help her schizophrenia. Drugs never cure disease. I'm not talking about a crisis. In a crisis, a drug can save a life. My grandson, my eldest grandson, is a paramedic. He saves lives with his drugs. We're not talking about that. I'm so appreciative of a general anesthetic if an operation is needed. No, we're talking about disease. Drugs never cure disease. The body and the body alone is the effective healer, if given the right conditions, and that's what we're looking at. Also, monosodium glutamate. Monosodium glutamate causes the nerve cells on the tongue to overfire, and when they overfire, the food tastes fantastic. That's a little bit of a worry, isn't it? You know what that means? Rotten food would taste nice. Be careful, because today, a lot of people are aware of the dangers of MSG, and so they've given it other names. One name is natural flavour enhancer. That almost sounds healthy, doesn't it? Be cautious of the names. We almost need to take a magnifying glass to the supermarket. One lady said, it's going to take me forever to shop. I said, only the first time. Only the first time. Give yourself a few hours. Check out. Check it all out. After that, see, I know exactly where I need to go when I go into a supermarket. But in the US, you've got shops like Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and there may be more that I have not met. But in those shops, you can get a fantastic array of health products, also gluten-free products, organic products. Chemicals. We've got to keep the chemicals out of our bodies. We've already touched on the chemicals in a couple of other lectures. Be careful what's in your laundry cupboard. Be careful what's in your kitchen, under your kitchen sink. What are you cleaning with? If you have mold and you put bleach on it, you've just created one of the most toxic combinations in the planet. So what can you do for mold? White vinegar. White vinegar will wipe it out. Bleach will kill mold and feed fungus. That's the next crop of mold. Because as we saw in our first lecture on the cycle of life, you've got your bacteria, yeast and funguses, then your moles, back to dust. So when you kill mold with bleach, you're feeding fungus, which means that's your next crop of mold. The good news is white vinegar kills mold and won't kill you. But if you have any mold in your house, please go and spray it with vinegar and quickly leave the room. You only need to come back in 10 minutes and it will be dead, and then you can wipe it up. But make sure you have gloves on, ideally a mask on. And then ring the plumber or the builder. You've got to find out why it's there. It shouldn't be there. Is there a leaking tap behind the wall? Does the guttering need to be cleaned out? Do you need to chop down a few trees and get that sunshine into the house? It should not be there. Mold is toxic. We should have no exposure to mold at all, zero exposure. I have met some very sick people who've been living in a moldy house. What are the symptoms? Well, as we say in Australia, how long's a piece of string? You know, I've seen people have eczema from mold exposure. I've seen people get depression from mold exposure. I've seen people have sinus problems from mold exposure, so there can be a variety of symptoms. back to the chemicals. Check what's in your food. What's in your clothes? What are you washing your clothes with? What are you cleaning your teeth with? What are you washing your hair with? All of these things need to be addressed. You have no say over the neighbour's house, but you have total say over your house. So aim to have a chemical-free home and a mould-free home. Electromagnetic field excess. It's called dirty electricity. We are electrical people. And when we are exposed to these devices that have different frequencies to the frequencies that our cells run at, it can cause a disruption. How I love my iPad and my iPhone. I'm allowed to have contact with my family, my friends. I got a photograph 3 days ago. Oh, my son just got married. Because of COVID and because of restrictions on travel, this young couple just went and got married by the sea. So that was very nice to see the beautiful photograph of my son getting married. But they are not in my bedroom while I'm sleeping. We spend a third of our life in that room. I do not have them on my body. I keep them away from my body. My iPhone has a safe sleeve on it. You Google safe sleeve. And that sleeve on my iPhone means I can have it up to my ear and I'm not getting any electromagnetic field going into my ear or into my head. Please have some rules in the home. Please turn off that Wi-Fi at night. We've got to protect the next generation. It's a very socially acceptable list, isn't it? No need for me to talk to you about the dangers of cyanide and arsenic, but there's definitely a need to become aware of this very socially acceptable list that little by little is eating away at body functions and, as you'll see when we go to the mind, at brain function. And this is why temperance is one of the laws of health. Because if you don't turn the tap off, you're still going to be mopping up in the other corner. Looking at the basic conditions required for healing, now we come to health law number 4, which is rest. There's a tiny little gland in the base of your brain called the pineal gland. And the pineal gland releases 4 hormones every night. But not all night, at specific times. So if you've got daylight saving, which I think we have at the moment, it is between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. So in the winter months, it'll be between 9 and 2 a.m. What are these hormones? These hormones have quite an effect on the functioning of the human body, and they have a specific role to work while we're sleeping. Epithalamin, this is a hormone that increases learning capacity. So if you want to increase your ability to retain and remember and understand the things that you're learning, go to bed early. Epithalamin not only increases learning capacity, it slows down aging. Arginine vasotocin is a hormone that puts you into a deep sleep, and it is also your natural painkiller. So if you have pain of any sort, go to bed early and your natural painkiller will kick in. But there's a waste from using that natural painkiller, so it is important to exercise in the day. When you exercise in the day and you build up a little bit of perspiration, it releases the waste. That's a side effect from using your arginine vasotocin. If you don't exercise in the day, you won't have a fresh dose of arginine vasotocin that night. Melatonin is called your fix and rejuvenate, nighttime hormone. And serotonin. Serotonin is your mood hormone. If you want to be happy all day long, go to bed early. If you want happy children, put them to bed early. My daughter-in-law has big blinds in her children's bedroom to cut out the light in the summer so they'll go to sleep early. It was probably in about the 1920s, a group of scientists were doing tests on rats while they slept, and they found that there was a period of time while they slept where the eyes were moving rapidly. They had electrodes on their brain and they found the brain was moving rapidly. And then there were periods of time where the eyes moved slowly. And they found that at the same time the brain was moving slowly. So they called it non-rapid eye movement time. And they called the rapid eye movement, rapid eye movement time. As they researched, they began to find out more and more about what happens while we sleep. And they found that in non-rapid eye movement time, there's a courier service. So what do I mean by a courier service? All through the day, everything that happens to us through the day is stored in our hippocampus at the back here, and that's our short-term storage unit. Everything that happens through the day is stored in the short-term storage unit. While we sleep, there's a courier service that takes it from the short-term storage unit up to the cortex. And it's in the cortex at the top of the brain where our long-term storage unit is. Something else happens in non-rapid eye movement time, and that's a cleaning. There's a cleaning system happen. It can be likened to the cleaning system that happens in many, many cities while we sleep. The cleaners come out. The cells actually shrink a little bit, allowing more fluid between the cells. So what's cleaned? Waste from neuronal activity, waste from combusting glucose and oxygen in the cell. And as you'll see when we look at the mind, that cleaning system even has the ability to clean up negative emotions. What happens in rapid eye movement time? In rapid eye movement time, there's a filing system. Remember what the courier system is doing? It's taking short-term memory to the long-term memory storage unit, and it's filed. Dr. Matthew Walker, in the book Why We Sleep, he's a neurologist. He's also an atheist. And he says it's almost as if sleep has an intelligence. Isn't that interesting? Well, it certainly does. God is the intelligence behind it, and it's an amazing process. Now, the filing happens in a certain order, and what helps to determine how it's filed is our dreams. This is the dreaming time. No wonder the eyes are moving fast. I don't know about you, but I have some crazy dreams. The dreams help to know how to file the memories that you experience through the day. Something else is happening in rapid eye movement time, and that is a consolidation of the things we learnt through the day. A consolidation or a confirmation or a settling in of the things that we learnt. It's in rapid eye movement time that the inventions are happening. Now let me show you how they work while we sleep. What the researchers discovered is these happen in 90-minute cycles. Dr. Matthew Walker, in his book Why We Sleep, he said, not negotiable 8 hours sleep a night. Not negotiable. So the choice you have is you can do 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. That's great time for students studying, because from 4 to 6, peak study time. You will learn almost twice as much compared to trying to study at midnight and falling asleep. So you can do 8 to 4 or 9 to 5. 9 to 5 is probably my favourite. Or at a stretch, 10 to 6. So let's do the 9 to 5. So from 9 to 10:30, there's our first 30-minute one. Non-rapid eye movement time takes up 80%. And your rapid eye movement time takes up 20%. And that's not a surprise. It's in the early part of the night where we need to get that information from the short term up to the long term. 10:30 to midnight. We've got 60% rapid eye movement and 40%. Sorry, non-rapid eye movement. 40% rapid eye movement. So then we get to from 12 to 1:30. Then we're looking at about a 50-50. 50 rapid eye movement and 50 non-rapid eye movement. Then we get from 1:30 to 3 to 3 a.m. and we're looking at 40% non-rapid eye movement and 60% rapid eye movement time. And then we've got, say, 3 to 5. 3 to 5 a.m., we've got 20% non-rapid eye movement happening and 80% rapid eye movement happening. Fascinating. And it shows so much. So what happens in people who don't go to bed till midnight? And unfortunately, because of technology today, you see this so much. At a recent health retreat that we ran in Alabama, I was surprised and almost shocked at how many of our guests, and we had 11 guests, are going, the earliest was 11 p.m., some midnight, some 1 a.m. I said, what do you do? What are you doing at that time of night? I can promise you, if the lights are dull, you have a book, and there's soft music in the background, you can't stay awake. I can't. What's keeping them awake? It's technology. When I discovered that these devices have blue light, not the same as sunlight, but similar, telling us it's daytime, I used to do all my emails of an evening. I don't now. I do my emails late afternoon. Because when that sun goes down, guess what should happen to the devices? They should close. Huge problem today is insomnia. Huge problem. By looking at this, you can see why. Dr. Matthew Walker, they did a lot of experiments, especially on students. They had 20 students. 10 of the students had 6 hours sleep a night. The other students, the other 10, had 8 hours sleep a night. And they all learnt the same things. 3 months later, they tested them, and the ones that had 8 hours sleep a night, I think it was 40% more knowledge they retained compared to the ones having 6 hours sleep a night. A 6 hour sleep a night, you almost feel okay on 6 hours sleep a night. He explains how this is the most dangerous, is 6 hours sleep a night. If you have 4 hours sleep, you don't feel very good. But if you have 6 hours, you actually feel okay. Dr. Matthew Walker showed that 10 nights of 6 hours sleep a night, 50% less cognitive performance and 50% less physical performance. And he said the danger is you don't even realize that you're lacking. He also showed that there are more accidents due to sleep deprivation than alcohol. And yet look at the campaign to get people to stop drinking and driving. We should have an equal campaign. And of course, I no way am condoning drink driving. But he says that in drink driving, at least they try and break. But he said, when they fall asleep, they're gone. There's not even a trying to break. I know in Australia, there's lots of signs on the road. Have a break. Have a rest. There's even ads on the television showing people falling asleep and then accidents. So there's certainly an awareness is coming with this. But the problem is technology, because that's the one thing that keeps people awake, isn't it? So how can we increase the output of these reviving hormones at night and access the value of this 8 hours sleep a night? So I'm going to show you what enhances our sleep and what deprives us of the value of the pineal gland secretions, deprives us of this process. What enhances is exercise. When you exercise through the day, you sleep better at night. Ecclesiastes, Proverb Ecclesiastes says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. In other words, when we are physically moving through the day, we're a lot more likely to sleep at night because our body's exhausted. What also enhances is hydration. We need to be well hydrated when we sleep. You can't hydrate your body just before you go to sleep. You've got to start in the beginning of the day. When you start in the beginning of the day, by the time you go to sleep at night, you've got a well hydrated body. I don't drink a lot of water before I go to sleep because I don't want my sleep to be interrupted with having to get up to the bathroom. But I would drink probably 3 to 4 glasses before breakfast. It's easy for me. I wake at 5 and eat at 7. And then I would have possibly another 3 glasses between breakfast and lunch. I try and leave a good 5 hours between my meals. And so in the afternoon, I have 2, maybe 3 glasses of water. And that allows me to sleep all night. I know some people that can drink 2 glasses of water before they go to bed and they can sleep all night. So you just have to get to know what works for you. That's why we're the doctor. If it works, do it. If it doesn't work, adjust until it does work. What deprives, of course, is lack of oxygen, which is lack of exercise, and dehydration. But what deprives also is late nights. Well, that's fairly obvious. If a person goes to bed at midnight, their short-term memory unit can be half full, so that the memory can't all fit in. So this is a contributing factor to losing memory. What also enhances is sleeping with an empty stomach. And the way to eat with an empty stomach is to have breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen. And if you have anything, or you call it supper at night, maybe it's just a cup of tea, cup of herb tea, maybe it's a bowl of soup. I know my sons, they work out after work, so they'll have a protein smoothie at night. So what really deprives is a large meal late. Large, late meal. When we sleep, our stomach wants to sleep too. And if our stomach has just had a big meal, it cannot sleep, because if it sleeps, then the food in the stomach starts to rot and that can poison the whole system. So that also deprives. What also deprives is technology in the bedroom. Technology in the bedroom interferes with the sleep. 80% of Americans sleep with their phone under their pillow, and the pillow is no protection against these electromagnetic fields. Is this the contributing factor to the headaches we're seeing, the mental illnesses that we're seeing? What also enhances sleep is fresh air. We should be sleeping with lots of fresh air in our bedrooms. And if you complain because it's cold, have a hot water bottle on your feet and have a nice big feather doona. Yes, we should be warm. We're warm-blooded creatures, but we need that fresh air. We need to breathe that fresh air. So another one that deprives is bad air in the bedroom. And bad air in the bedroom can be from a moldy pillow. It can be from the bedding hasn't been washed for a while. It can be a few things. No fresh air coming in. Maybe even mold under the bed. You've got to investigate. If people can't sleep, you've got to investigate all of these, because there is always a reason why people can't sleep. What enhances sleep is clean, natural bedding. Natural. Clean and natural bedding. So start looking out for the cotton blankets, the woolen blankets, the feather blankets. If you have a feather quilt, it needs to be out in the sun maybe once a month. You can wash it once a year. We lose a lot of moisture while we sleep, and that moisture can be taken into those feathers. The feathers can even start to develop mold. So it's important. I love feather. We have our feather quilt on our bed, but I air it often, I sun it often, and I wash it about once a year. So you can do that. The other clean bedding and clean natural bedding is when you wake up in the morning, throw the bed clothes back, open the window, ideally put the fan on and let that bed have an air. You can make it an hour later, but it's important to allow that bed to air so that when you go into bed the next night, you've got fresh air surrounding that area. That is a very important part of it. So you can do much to enhance your sleep by implementing these things. Just a few more things, especially on the invention. There's a story of a man who was a pianist and there was one piece of music he just could not get. He went to bed. When he woke up in the morning, he went straight to his piano and he played it beautifully. God has an appointment with us early in the morning. And we miss that appointment so often because we go to bed too late. We eat too late. We're dehydrated. We haven't exercised. We don't get that adequate sleep. Let me give you the verse. It's Isaiah chapter 50, verse 4, where the Bible says, "The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I may know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth my ear to hear as the learned." I never use an alarm clock. Did you know we're the only creature that uses an alarm clock? But if you implement all of this, and of course one thing I didn't put, which is important, is just your early nights. If you go to bed in a fresh, clean bed, with the windows open and you've got an empty stomach, you're well hydrated, you've exercised through the day, there's no technology in your bedroom, that still quiet voice can easily waken you in the morning. And I know that when I have meetings to give, I must do this. I must get that early morning appointment where God puts ideas into my brain. There's your inventions. It's in those early hours. Have you noticed that if we have a dream, we don't remember it if we wake up at midnight? But if we wake up at 3 or 4, we usually remember it because that's when the dreaming time happens. As you'll see when we look at the mind, the tragedy is most people go through life never fully accessing the full potential of their mind. There's a great deceiver out there. We talked about the deceiver earlier. And what he wants to do is inhibit the part of our brain where God communicates with man. He wants to prevent human beings going to that early morning appointment. And so with great deceptive power, he lures them into the technology at night. He lures them into eating late at night. Remember, it's a deception. So many people don't realize, especially those with insomnia, that they're contributing to the problem. We can have sleep that revives. We can have sleep that heals as long as we adhere to the formula. So rest not only at night, but in the Bible. I was about 25 when I read the Bible, and I got to Exodus where the Ten Commandments are, and I got to the fourth commandment. And it said, 6 days God made heaven and earth, and the seventh day he rested. So man should do all his work on 6 days and rest the seventh. I was surprised at this because I'm a fifth generation Scottish descent. So I grew up in a Presbyterian church, and we went to church every Sunday. But you know, I remember listening to adults talk one day, and they were saying, yes, Saturday's the true Sabbath, but we go to church on Sunday. And this intrigued me. I was a very quiet child. And you know what quiet children do? They listen. They listen to adults. They listen to lots around them. That's why I say it is good to have quiet children. They take in more. So I was excited in my early 20s to meet some young people who were Seventh-day Adventists that kept the Sabbath. And then I remembered what I'd heard as a child, and I began to investigate and how I love the Sabbath. It made reforms, or it caused reforms in so many areas of my life. I was a better housekeeper because every Friday I'd make sure the bathrooms were cleaned. I'd make sure all the washing was done, the ironing was done, because a lady's not going to rest if there's a whole lot of work to do. Now, I remember when I first started taking my little children to Sabbath school, that I remember the song. It said, "We get ready for the Sabbath on Monday." Monday's a busy day. We get ready for the Sabbath on Tuesday. And I remember thinking, oh, that's how you do it. And so that's what I started to do. I would do all the washing of the children's good clothes on Sunday. I would iron them and have them in the cupboard. You don't want Friday to be crazy. So little by little by little, I prepared for the Sabbath. My husband and I love work. You can't hold us down. I think if it wasn't for the Sabbath, we'd wear out very quickly. But on the Sabbath, my husband does not turn his computer on. He does not go to the office. So remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days God made the heaven and earth, and seventh day he rested. He gave us an example. And in Genesis 2, 2 and 3, it says, "And on the seventh day God rested his work that he had made. And he blessed the Sabbath day, and he made it holy." That's when I discovered this day's been set apart. It is not for our choosing. God has chosen this day. And he will bless you when you keep that Sabbath day holy.